Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
Hip-hop is supposedly experiencing a new golden age. From Lil Nas X to Cardi B, black women and queer people are reaching new heights within the culture. But those same groups are still dealing with the oppression that hip-hop was built to escape. Season 2 of the NPR podcast, Louder Than a Riot, is diving into the deep-seated discrimination inside hip-hop culture. And co-hosts Sydney Madden and Rodney Carmichael are here. Welcome to you both.
Hey, thanks for having us.
Thank you, Deepa.
So let's go to the first episode of the season, which delves into the trial of Tory Lanez, who was found guilty of shooting rapper Megan Thee Stallion in the feet in the summer of 2020. Now, there's a lot of misinformation surrounding the case. You went to the courthouse to cover the trial, and people there were very divided over it. Sydney, why did you want to start season two with this case?
We thought it was essential to start season two with the case of Tory Lanez assaulting Megan Thee Stallion, because really that's where the first epiphany of this connection really dawned on us back in the summer of 2020. Actually, ironically, as we were making season one of the show. And it was really a wake-up call for the type of misogynoir that's been condoned, contained, and pretty much rewarded within the confines of hip-hop culture for decades. And that's exactly what we wanted to confront.
Yeah. And just quickly, tell us what you mean by, and this is explained really well in the podcast, misogynoir.
Absolutely. Yeah. Misogynoir is a sociological term in theory that depicts the compounding factors of racism and sexism that fall on the shoulders of black women in society, as well as those read as black women.
And in the Megan Thee Stallion, Tory Lanez case, it was Megan Thee Stallion who was the victim, but she was suddenly being put on trial. And you all spoke with scholar Moya Bailey, who coined the term, explaining how this fits into the context of Megan's case. Let's listen.
People are thinking that this is about whether Megan is telling the truth and the fact that she had to prove that she was in fact being honest about what happened to her, that is a manifestation of misogynoir.
Rodney, how did you see the misogynoir playing out over the course of your reporting on this case? And did the verdict do anything to calm the prejudices against Megan?
Well, the misogynoir played out in all kinds of ways. The buildup to this case was 2 years in the making. I think during that time, you saw a lot of memes making fun of Megan's trauma and tragedy around being shot. You saw a lot of talk about disbelieving her, you know, believing that she was lying and hadn't been shot. It was in other artists' music, you know, artists as huge as Drake. One of the most prominent lines in there is a line in which he basically, you know, casts aspersions and doubt on Megan's truth and Megan's story and being shot. You know, it was everywhere. It was pervasive, you know.
So the Megan Thee Stallion situation also highlighted how two things can be true at once, that the criminal justice system is set up to hurt black men, and Tory Lanez shot Megan. Sydney, why do you think it's difficult for so many people to reconcile that?
It can be very difficult for people to reconcile those two truths and hold that dichotomy within them, because in a certain sense, it also requires people to wrestle with their own morality and even sometimes their own allegiances. We know that the criminal justice system is discriminatory and disproportionately impacts people of color, black and brown men specifically, historically. And to that effect, a lot of hetero black women have taken up to guarding and shielding black men from these systems, from these powers that attempt to all but enslave and detain them. And when that is being asked of somebody, it's almost as if you have to put pretty much your own mortality behind someone else's in order to protect them. And I think that was really what a lot of people felt like they were choosing to do in this situation.
Yeah. And you know, the thing that really struck me, even though Tory Lanez was convicted, Megan Thee Stallion's reputation is just, I feel like it'll never be the same, no matter how talented a rapper she is. Which brings us to your second episode of the season that tells the story of MC Sha-Rock. Rodney, she was one of the pioneers of hip-hop, yet many people don't know about her. Why?
Yeah, well, you know, in a lot of ways, while a lot of those men, those male pioneers, are remembered and heralded now, her name has kind of become a footnote, really. And I think a lot of that has to do with her experience as a woman in hip-hop and things she dealt with that the male members of her group didn't, like, you know, a pregnancy at a very pivotal time in the group's career, not being received well even by her own members.
You know, I think that's a very strong example of what you're talking about, that, you know, the behind-the-scenes stuff that we learn in this episode is so compelling because Sha-Rock reveals that the group acted as if it were a betrayal. You know, we have a clip from your podcast. Let's just listen.
But do you ever think about the double standard of that? Like how you're choosing to do something with your own body could be a betrayal to them? Like how could that be?
I didn't look at it at that time. At the time, you know, far as like the betrayal, I kind of got it. You know, because not the fact that I betrayed them, but the fact that I love hip hop so much that I could have, you know, thought about, you know, there could have been other ways to, you know, to do it or other ways that I could have made sure that that wasn't the right timing. That was a decision that I made.
And Sydney, you continued to press Sha-Rock on this point. Why do you think she's still giving her crew members credit for this decades later?
I think Sha-Rock, as a lot of our protagonists in this season did, defended a lot of the actions and implications of group members for the longevity and future of hip-hop overall. There's this, you know, the saying that we come to interrogate a lot, and it's doing it for, quote-unquote, the sake of the culture. Because at the time that Sha-Rock was coming up, and even now, 50 years in, with hip-hop being the most commercially successful genre coming out of the U.S., it's still a precarious and fragile art form, very much so. So a lot of the things that Black women and femmes in hip-hop are being asked with and tasked with to put up with or to condone or overlook, it's always done, quote-unquote, for the sake of the culture, for the longevity of all of us. But really, like, that's what we need to confront the most.
So, Rodney, there's so much in those first two episodes that have already dropped in season two of Louder Than a Riot. What can we expect from the rest of the season?
Oh, man, we are just getting started. Our next episode is about confronting the male gaze in hip-hop and body policing, which is what happens when everything that we see is through the lens of what men want to see, especially in rap in terms of how women are dressed and how they, you know, have to appease the male gaze.
And Louder Than a Riot has been so important in beautifully telling these untold stories and exposing truths within hip-hop culture and beyond. And sadly, this second season will be the last due to the NPR layoffs that we have reported on. I'd just love to hear very quickly what you would like your podcast's legacy to be.
Well, I think in particular, when we look at this season, we want our legacy to be that we had the baddest, best, most brilliant team in narrative podcasting. You know, this was a very collaborative season. Our producers and editor, Saraya Shockley, Gabby Bulgarelli, Sam J. Leeds, and Mano Sundaresan, we have all been very collaborative in terms of reporting and writing these stories. That in a lot of ways, yeah, whatever the future for Louder is, it definitely won't be the same without them.
Somebody snap them up quick. Sydney Madden and Rodney Carmichael, co-hosts of the NPR podcast Louder Than a Riot. Season 2 just dropped. Thank you so much to both of you.
Thank you, Deepa.
Thanks for having us.